Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Pepla vilnirab, pepla immoral, pepla bosal, pepla pénitrab. Yo di, nou son pep ki sot, men nou pap pranze pou wosh. Pepla san fami, pepla san titi, pepla egri, pepla toutouni. Ton e boulem, nou pap ka efasen, se sel bonje ki pou jije. Se religion sa, pale an pil sa, se misyonè sa, ki fe pep la vil ne rabou. Che manje che sa, se manje che sa, krasé agrikilti sa, ki fe pep la vil ne rabou. Ya fe gran pampan, ya fe popagan, pandan nou lan prison, yo touye tisan. Men chak epok, ge pou l pase, men tout mama, si ye de l'eau lanje. Nou pral lan gran bois, nou pral bile kafe, nage de l'eau pou tout san ki koule. Men je ki riche, pa chan mwen je ki pov, men chak koukou, klere pou je. Se gouvenman sa, se kou d'etat sa, pale an pil sa, ki fe pep la vil ne rabou. Sa fe koule sa, moun an ro, moun an basa, se za fe klas sa, ki fe pep la vil ne rabou. Ki fe pep la vil ne rabou. La ville les rabou, qui fait pep la ville les rabou, qui fait pep la ville les rabou, qui fait pep la ville les rabou.
Legacy of 1804. I am your host, Alice Backer. Today's date is December 8th, 2017. And tonight we are welcoming Albert Saint-Jean from BAJI, which is the Black Alliance for Just Immigration. He's going to talk to us about a forum on TPS that is happening next Monday, December 11th, at PS 241 at 976 President Street, which I'm assuming is in Brooklyn. I think it is in Brooklyn. The Black Alliance for Just Immigration, Haitian Americans United for Progress, and the PS 241 Parent Teacher Association will be hosting a community forum, understanding what the ending of TPS means, get legal information, how communities can support, organize, and advocate for affected families and neighbors, and translation will be available. And that forum is going to be Monday, December 11, 2017, at 5:30 p.m. All right. And that's going to be at PS 241 at 976 President Street. So before I continue, let me just check in to make sure that I've got Albert with me. Albert, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for coming to the show under such short notice. But also, you know, the flyer went out yesterday. Well, at least that's the first time I saw the flyer. So that's why I decided to invite you on the spot, and I'm very happy that you are here with us and that you can hear me fine. I just want to remind the listeners of Legacy of 1804 that here at Love 1804, we amplify Haitian voices live on air every Friday night, and that is just the audio version of what we have been doing online at kiskeacity.com since 2005. You can find us on all the social media, well, and specifically Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr at the handle at Kiskeacity, and on Twitter, as of today, I believe there's about, there's definitely over 50,000 of you following at Kiskeacity. Yeah, so I'm grateful to all of you for that. And you can listen to past shows on iTunes by searching the keywords LOF 1804. And past shows are also available at kidscayacity.com under the tab LOF 1804. While we have our guest tonight, Albert Saint-Jean, who of course we're very happy to have with us, you can call in at any moment and let me know you want to ask a question or react to what you're listening to. And that number is 714-242-6119, 714-242-6119. And just press 1 when you're ready to talk, and you will be welcomed with open arms. So, Albert, why don't we start with a bit about yourself, who you are, and a little bit about your background, and what you do at BAJI, Black Alliance for Just Immigration.
Hi, yes. So my name is Albert Saint-Jean, Albert Saint-Jean. I'm a Haitian American. I was born here in the United States in Elizabeth, New Jersey. I'm the lead organizer for the Black Alliance for Just Immigration here in New York City. It's an organization that tries to bridge the gap between Black Americans and Black immigrants through issues involving racial justice, economic justice, and immigrant rights. The reason why we focus on this aspect of the issue we deal with the cross section, because the same machine that's deporting Black immigrants is also the same machine putting Black Americans in jail. So we do workshops, we do Know Your Rights workshops for folks, letting them know how to interact with ICE agents. We connect people with legal help. We advocate for people in detention centers. We build partnerships and provide direct support to our communities. We have a network of organizations called the Black Immigrant Network that we work with by leveraging, like grants and so forth, anything to help support our communities. So.
Yes, and we've had Ben Ndugakabuye on the show about twice to talk about ICE raids on Black immigrants in New York and specifically in the Haitian community. So this is not our first interaction with BAJI, but thank you so much for putting that so succinctly. And so we're very interested in this TPS forum that BAJI is holding on Monday. And so do you want to start by telling us, and I'm correct, right, that it's actually going to happen in Brooklyn?
It is,
right?
Money.
President's Tree,
yeah,
is in Brooklyn. Okay.
Yeah, it's in Crown Heights, yeah.
Oh, great. All right. So it's actually in Crown Heights. Okay. So why don't we start with why BAJI decided, and you decided to organize this forum?
Well, the PTA for that school reached out to us, and we have been looking for opportunities to do forums. We participated in the forum in Mega Evers. We did another forum where we showed a documentary screening about the conditions in Haiti, and talked about the impact that that deporting 58,000 people back to Haiti would have on the country. So this was just something that we wanted to continue this conversation by actually connecting folks with people that can actually help them, because before it was more informative, before the decision was made. Now that that decision has been made, we want to start letting people know who they could turn to for help, and what ways we could start to organize around this issue going forward, and to start plotting for a path after, beyond TPS, because it can't be just about TPS. We need a path to permanent residency for folks.
So, wow, yeah, I'm so happy you mentioned this, because as Haitians at Legacy of 1804, we want, TPS holders to be able to do whatever it is they please if they want to, and if they've identified that they have a better life in the United States, obviously, and they think that, renewing TPS every 6 to 18 months is the best way to go without them having some full rights, Obviously we were never against that, but we also very well understood the whole time, and were very in agreement with our friends at Kumukoda, that what needs to happen is something more permanent, because it's obvious that the Democratic Party has its agenda, and its agenda is to demonize Trump, and, you know, a lot mm-hmm. of, you know, the TPS, and I've heard an organizer at your organization, I can't remember his name, but I think he's either from Eritrea or Ethiopia, say this on Democracy Now.
You're talking about Abraham, he's from Eritrea.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've actually heard him say that, you know, this whole like frenzy around TPS makes it sound like, you know, this is like a Trump specific issue, but there were deportations happening under Obama as well. So there's a politicization of the TPS mm-hmm. issue on the part of, the establishment of the Democratic Party that makes it sound like the Democratic Party was the best thing that ever happened for immigrants. And we know that mm-hmm. under Obama, for example, there were more deportation of Haitians mm-hmm. than under any other president specifically. Mm-hmm. And then this, you know, this was not necessarily in the context of TPS. So I'm ecstatic to hear you say that something more permanent needs to happen. So if you want to elaborate on that, we'd love to hear that. And we know that, you know, the people who've been very critical of the DNC, the Democratic Party establishment, and people like Hillary Clinton have already said that, you know, it's kind of foolish to think that, you know, it's only because we're under a Trump administration that this issue is happening with TPS. Mm-hmm. So if you could talk to us about what you as Baji envision as this more permanent solution, I know that they've been holding forums on general amnesty, for example. Tell us what Baji's vision is on what this more permanent solution should be.
Yeah, so for instance, there was a law that was proposed by Lydia Velazquez, a representative from New York, where she was calling for anybody who had TPS past or present to be able to have a pathway to permanent residency or citizenship. To us, this is only what makes sense, because the reason why these countries need TPS in the first place is because these countries they didn't have the infrastructure to be able to rebuild themselves. Why didn't they have the infrastructure? Because these are countries that are exploited, particularly by the United States. So it doesn't make sense that the same country that's exploiting them and creates a condition to where this country does not have the capacity to even bounce back from a hurricane, from an earthquake, like most other industrialized countries are able to, you know, these countries, until they can reach another status in their development, that's another story. But for the time being, they're not able to repatriate all these people. These people left for a reason, because the country was not able to accommodate them. Like, for instance, in Haiti right now, you have people being deported from the Dominican Republic as well. About 23,000 people on the border are staying on the border in little towns, on little campsites between DR and Haiti. And because the government cannot repatriate those 23,000 people. They just can't. It's not simply that they're stateless people. They just don't have the capacity to take them in. How are they going to be able to take in 58,000? It doesn't make sense. As we know right now, currently, Haiti's having political turmoil, partly because of the United States, which tampered with the last elections that we had over there. And then Hurricane Matthew hit the breadbasket of Haiti, the Southern Peninsula. You know, so you're talking about a country that right at the moment, because of years of exploitation, because of it being made an example of, because Haiti is the world's example of Black self-determination. Haiti has been punished for years, for centuries. And so now we expect them to just bounce back and take in almost 60,000 people like that, like nothing, after what this country has done to them. that doesn't make sense. So we believe in a permanent solution. We believe in a permanent pathway to residency, a permanent pathway to citizenship. And for those, and we really do not like the narrative of good immigrant, bad immigrant. It is true. Majority of TPS holders are contributing to this economy. Deporting them would cost this country way more money than it would cost to keep them here. And particularly the money that we're losing because of what they're doing for the economy here. And not only that, the money they're sending back to support their families back home. I know a woman that put three of her kids through college, and three of them are engineers now. So we basically, that's what we believe. That's just the longer version of just saying there needs to be a permanent status for them. And if even if someone is not law abiding, that is our problem here in this country. They broke the laws of this country. They should serve their time in this country and be brought back to general population once they've served their time.
All right, so Albert Saint-Jean, you just mentioned a good immigrant, bad immigrant controversy. This is the first time hearing of it, although I'm not surprised about it. Do you want to elaborate on what this good immigrant, bad immigrant discussion has been?
Yeah, so basically the reason why we bring it up is because the majority of deportations of Black immigrants of all nationalities are criminal deportations. So when people talk about this, oh, well, you know, this person is a law-abiding citizen, this person was a criminal. And we have to examine that a little bit more closely, because majority of the people that are being deported are being deported from Black immigrant communities are being deported because of low-level minor crimes. Many of them are being deported because of broken windows policing, you know, something similar to stop and frisk. You might stop someone on the street, find a little bit of marijuana on them. People don't even have to be convicted. Just the simple fact of you getting arrested and you're undocumented, your fingerprint gets sent to ICE, they pick you up at the courthouse. There was a gentleman from Barbados who was picked up from the courthouse right after his case was dismissed. So this is why we don't like the narrative of why we say good immigrant, bad immigrant narrative. Because people always want to portray that any immigrant that that hasn't been arrested deserves to be here, and anyone that has been arrested doesn't. No one says that, but it insinuates that, and it's very unfair considering the fact that 3 out of 4 Black immigrants who are deported on criminal grounds, and the vast majority of that is nonviolent. So yeah, that's what we mean when we talk about the good immigrant, bad immigrant narrative.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's very interesting. Now, when you at Bhaji talk about a more permanent solution, what exactly are you envisioning?
Okay, a more permanent solution. For instance, the law that I mentioned before. Everyone, past and present, who had TPS. Including those from West Africa, the places where they were struck with Ebola, Sudan, all of these places that have had TPS, that they should be allowed to have that permanent pathway to citizenship, to be able to basically that, and also general amnesty. That's another solution that we seek. That this is something that was done in the 80s under Reagan, when folks were here that were undocumented, when they just when they allowed them all to have be able to get green cards through family reunification or what have you. Any of these methods in our eyes would suffice. Just anything that would allow them to not have to worry about ever the fear of being deported or having that held over them. In particular, especially in the Haitian community, maybe twice the amount of people who currently have TPS would qualify for it, but many people didn't want to come out of the shadows because TPS has the word temporary in it, you know? So we want something that would allow those people that are in the shadows to be able to come out and live a normal life and those who had TPS past and present to be able to live a normal life without the fear of deportation, without the fear of harassment from law enforcement, from ICE, and to be able to contribute to this country, to this economy, to the society, but most importantly to their communities and to each other freely. So that's what we envision.
So Albert St. Jean, the people at Kumukota who have been advocating for general amnesty, one of the things they say is that you know, there's about three times, or even, I mean, there's like a multiple of three times the number of people on TPS who are undocumented in the United States, mm-hmm. In the Haitian community, for example, and mm-hmm. and even maybe in all of the immigrant communities. And mm-hmm. so am I hearing you say that you're extending, you're trying to find a solution? If you're talking about general amnesty, you're actually starting to talk about a solution that goes beyond just the subset of people who are TPS holders and
exactly.
just a wider population of the undocumented?
Exactly, exactly. We would definitely support that a measure like that. In fact, that's like the ultimate goal. However, you know, given how politics works, you have to work with one subset of people first and so on and so forth. But the truth is that ideally, general amnesty would be something that would be more more humane, frankly speaking, because it allows people to live, like I said earlier, it allows people to live a full life, to enjoy full citizenship here in this country. You know, when constantly, one thing I noticed living in Brooklyn is that, or just really throughout my life, even with people in my family, is that so many people are so like precarious about their status that it limits their life so much, but yet they still manage to eke out a living somehow. They still manage to eke out a living, but they could do so much more if they were able to just like not have to worry about the status, apply to any job that they qualified for, be able to go to school without, you know, I mean, many of them go to school anyway, but still get the jobs that they deserve to get because of their education. And you know, but it's sad to say, we don't have any way of making this happen today. So many of them have to do odd jobs to get by. They have to work two or three jobs. Some of them have to do illegal things like selling bootleg DVDs. Not that that's as popular as it once was, but still, it allows people to be a part of American society. It allows people to, it makes the country a better place. Yeah, so it doesn't make sense to go for anything less.
Yeah, though, this is great. This is great. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you about is, we know it's you know, so many things in this country, you know, between the you know, Democrat Republican duopoly, kind of don't end up making sense, because people assume that there's like a big difference between the two parties. But we do know that the last general amnesty happened under Reagan. That said, mm-hmm. with Trump's crazy and anti-immigrant rhetoric and the building a wall to prevent Mexicans from coming in, what do you at Bhaji think is the likelihood that there would be a general amnesty under the current climate, or even a pathway to citizenship for TPS holders?
Well, we know that this administration, I mean, and it's not just Trump either. I would be surprised if Obama pretty much had a chance to do that. Democrats have dropped the ball on this several times as well. So it's not just Trump. And also, we also know that this is like a long game. We don't expect it to be something that'll happen within the next year or even any time within this administration. But we would rather, we're more focused on long-term strategies that provide an ultimate solution rather than kicking the can down the road like what's been happening with TPS. And look where that got us.
Right.
Our philosophy, yeah, exactly. Like our philosophy is, you know, to find a cure, not to slap a Band-Aid on the problem. So, yeah, what we want to do is we want people in our communities to start.
Are you saying TPS was that Band-Aid? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Okay. It was, I mean, even though we needed it, it was something very important, but it was something that was being held over our people's heads. You know, it was, and now you see it being weaponized to reinforce white supremacy right now in this country. And we would, if it got extended again, hey, that's better than it being terminated. But ultimately, as long as it's temporary protected status, it's something that the bulk of undocumented people in the Haitian community will not want to be a part of, even less so after this episode. It just has to be something permanent. And what we want to do is get people in our communities to understand that they have to hold their local politicians accountable, whether they're Democrat, Republican, Green Party, Socialist, whatever. We want them to know to hold those people accountable, because in this next coming year, in these midterms, I'm pretty sure a lot of districts are going to go blue, right? And the thing with the Democratic Party is that, as you already know, is that they take the black vote for granted. They take all their votes for granted, really, because they're a party that's more focused on patronage. We have to let our people know that, to really understand that we don't want this patronage. We want real solutions to our problems. And we have to start fomenting a movement towards that aim rather than little strategic moves. Like, we have to play chess, not checkers.
You're right. Yeah. All right. So, Albert St. Jean, you and I are both talking here, and neither you nor I is a TPS holder. If we put ourselves in the shoes of a TPS holder, what should a TPS holder expect from the forum on Monday night that is going to make their immediate life easier than what it is right now? Because right now, I understand, if we can, you know, start focusing on like the life of a TPS holder right now, my understanding is Trump, after having extended initially TPS for, I think, 6 months for Haitians when he first got elected, and this was after all of the Democratic Party organizing, including those organizations in the Haitian community receiving Democratic Party funding, put all their eggs in the basket of, you know, an extra 6 months of TPS. That was granted, and then when it came time to renew that, the Trump administration said no, but it said there's 18 months for those on TPS to essentially, what, find their way back to Haiti? There's 18 months, right? So if I'm a TPS holder now, and I show up at your forum on Monday, what is in there for me?
Okay. When you go there, you should be able to begin, after coming out of there, you should be able to recognize what avenues you can take, whether it is to prolong your the legality of your stay here, or, you know, like, for instance, like si subisen si po asil, like things like that. I said that in Creole intentionally.
To Creole at any moment. We can speak whatever we want.
Oh, yeah. Good. Yeah, because certain things I'd rather say it in Creole. And also, if you're there, you should also be able to identify people in the neighborhood, in Flatbush in particular, in Crown Heights, that can provide direct services, whether it's to connect you to HRA benefits, social services, what have you. Because even if you're undocumented, there's still things that you qualify for here in New York City. And another thing is that, besides the child in the background, another thing is that you should be able to lower your voice, okay? Sorry about that. Another thing that you should be able to be able to come out with is I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. You should be able to find out who you can organize with to get your voice heard, what legal services there are, and what other local resources there are. I want to make sure that they know who to plug into, whether it's for tenant advocacy, because landlords are taking advantage of people's undocumented status. Local immediate resources that they can use, because even though we're not fully a sanctuary city like they say, we're still better off than a lot of other places. So in New York mm-hmm. City, there are a lot of resources we can use.
And why would you say we're not fully a sanctuary city? It appears like the mayor of New York, and certainly I think the mayor of LA expressed that we are sanctuary cities. Why do you say we're not fully a sanctuary city in New York?
Yeah. Oh, no. Well, you know, if you walk down Nostrand Avenue and Newkirk, if you, go anywhere around Eastern Parkway and, you know, Franklin, all these areas where our people live are heavily policed. And the areas with the most deportations are in New York City are areas with Black immigrants. And this is because of the type of policing that we have, broken windows policing. We can't say that we're a sanctuary city when someone can get arrested in New York City for a minor crime, have their fingerprint taken, and then ICE knows where to find them. We can't be a sanctuary city when ICE is snatching people from Rikers Island, from the courthouses. We're not a sanctuary city when you have just armies, legions of cops walking and combing down through your neighborhood, and yet no community resources, no community-centered programs are being put forth. You're spending more money on policing than you're spending on resources for the community or affordable housing. So yeah, it's hard for me to I think that the calling New York a sanctuary city is very disingenuous when you look
at this is actually the first time I'm hearing this perspective, and it's very interesting. Yeah, because it's funny because New York does get flack from the extreme right for being a sanctuary city. And you're debunking that based on the fact that broken windows policing still reigns here. Now, it's fascinating you just mentioned this, because I had a coworker tell me today that de Blasio did away with broken windows. What would you tell my coworker in response?
I don't know. That's the funny thing, because they'll say they did away with broken windows the same way they said they did away with stop and frisk, right? But So they went from stop and frisk to broken windows. No, actually, they started with broken windows in the 90s, stop and frisk, then broken windows again, and then now they're going to start calling it community policing. Community policing looks like this.
But you're saying the profiling is still the same, regardless of what they're calling these policies.
Exactly.
Okay.
They're just changing the name, but the tactics are still the same. I was with kids the other day on Notion Avenue, in St. Mark's, where police officers from the 77th precinct jumped out and started running through everybody's pockets without warning, with no reason or cause whatsoever. So Yeah, that's so I don't know if broken windows, if what they're calling it now, but that still looks like broken windows to me.
And I'm not sure how much you're involved with the with broken windows, anti-broken windows advocacy, but why is it that people are even saying that Mayor de Blasio did away with broken windows? Was there a court that ruled that broken windows was unconstitutional? I mean, why is there this perception out there? Or is it just the mayor's PR?
It's more PR. It's the rhetoric. The thing is that the to their credit, this mayor and the last one, Bloomberg, their language was not as visceral as Giuliani's. So
right.
People look at the tone and what he's saying and perhaps the intent behind his language, but they're not really looking at the impact of the policy.
Mm-hmm.
They're just looking at the semantics, but the impact is very much the same.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is great. And it's fascinating to be able to extrapolate from broken windows for the American population, the citizen population, to what it ends up meaning for people on TPS and people who are undocumented.
Yeah.
And now, you mentioned a moment ago, so you just made it clear that at the forum on Monday, there will be very practical tips for TPS holders in terms of getting as many services as they can in this 18-month period. Now, you mentioned that landlords are taking advantage of TPS holders. Do you want to explain how?
Yes. I'll give an example. There's a Haitian family in an apartment off of Empire Boulevard. The landlord knew that they were undocumented, and he wanted them out so that he can gut the apartment and get higher paying tenants in there. So what he did was he called ACS on the family so that they could get their kids taken away and also that, you know, have that encounter with perhaps like that possible encounter that would scare them off and scare away the tenants. That's just one of the examples that they'll do. There's other examples of landlords just like knowing that, you know, maybe this tenant is undocumented and they want them out. So they'll let the apartment get run down until the point where the city says it's no longer habitable. They find the landlord. The landlord gets the tenant out, eats the fine, renovates the apartment, and makes four times as much he was making before off the apartment. Like, it's things like that. Like, landlords use the fact that that they know that a lot of tenants are, who are undocumented or who have TPS are very scared and don't want to rock the boat, don't want to make any waves. They use that to their advantage because they know that these people are afraid to speak up. But, like, as I said, even though we're not fully a sanctuary city, you still have rights in this city if when you're a tenant. Ou toujou gen dwa, ou pa pon se ou pa gen dwa pou te ou pa gen papye ou se sou tipye sou ye. Ou toujou gen dwa nan New York. You can, hopefully we can have, I'm sorry, go ahead. You're about to say?
No.
Okay, yeah. So, hopefully, and really, and I did a bad job earlier. I should really say who's going to be at the event on Monday. We will have Haitian Americans United for Progress there, who they do many direct service work for the Haitian community, and also Haitian Women for Haitian Refugees. They help people get connected with social services and any other type of help that they need, and they're also connected with Flamboyant, who works with Haitian students, and there's also Haitian.
Yeah, we've had all these people on the show, so yeah.
You've had all
go
of them
ahead,
on.
Go
the,
on.
So yeah,
we've had Flamboyant on. We've had Haitian Women for Haitian Refugees
okay.
on. Yes. So, but
okay,
yeah,
good,
keep going.
Good. Yeah, so, and also Haitian, New York Haitian Leadership Coalition, Mona Lisa from there will be there as well. And they're doing a lot of direct service work and advocacy in the community as well. So, hopefully, it's tentative. We're hoping to have a Flatbush Tenant Coalition and, hopefully someone from the Equality for Flatbush. They are tenant advocates. And they do a lot of stuff around gentrification, anti-gentrification work. And they have access to tenant rights advocacy, and they organize tenant unions and so forth. So yeah, there should be a lot of information there, and a lot of places we can send folks for help. So yeah.
All right, this is great. I'd like to remind our listeners that if they want to react to Albert St. Jean or just ask questions, the number is 714-242-6119. Again, 714-242-6119. And to those who are already on the line, just press 1 to ask your question and do so as soon as you can. Why don't we, Albert, go into let's discuss what resistance you may or may not be getting to this campaign as Bhaji. Whether there is any resistance at all in a place like New York, mm-hmm. and what your challenges are in doing this advocacy, just even generally for just TPS holders, but also just expanding from TPS holders to all of the undocumented.
Yeah. So one of the biggest challenges that we face is that is the particularly people are scared. That's like one of the scariest things, is that people are not getting their voices heard because they don't want to be identified. And what ends up happening is it hurts the community overall, because then politicians can just claim that there's not a need for it. And it's not as if the politicians don't know that their folks are scared, that they don't know that, oh, well, we didn't know that this was going on. It's just that the squeakiest wheel gets the oil. And because they're not making noise, because they'd rather just, they don't want any trouble, it makes it a lot harder to get these stories heard and for people to really take seriously the struggle that particularly the Black undocumented community has. You know, a lot of people, even within our own community, didn't even realize how serious over-policing was affecting our community and aiding in gentrification until we actually started showing them the facts, showing them stories and data to back it up. And then the dots started getting connected, because everyone knows our story in our community. Everybody does, but we all think that it's just this individual or silo thing, or we think that there's nothing we can do about it. So therefore, what's even the point? So we become more apathetic, and we just want to survive, to make it to the next day, to put food on the table and to keep the lights on. That precarious kind of existence in this capitalist system is the really the biggest obstacle that we find. Because I mean, you do get pushback. We get pushback from folks, like whenever we bring up things like broken windows or holding local politicians accountable. We get pushback from folks saying that basically blaming the victim. And usually it's people from within our own community that are pointing the finger back, or how come they just don't get their stuff together? Why don't they just get their papers? Like, it's not as easy as it was maybe when you came through. You know, it's the process is longer now, more expensive. Yeah, but I would say the biggest obstacle is people's fear.
Yeah, and it's fascinating how older, you know, waves of Haitian immigrants who've been here longer than the TPS holders forget their own process of becoming either permanent citizens or, permanent residents or citizens. So thank you for bringing that up. Now, earlier when we were discussing the so-called good immigrant versus bad immigrant a myth that's out there, and you said that technically all of those who get deported have criminal records, but they only get deported based on minor offenses. Tell us about that TPS holder, or even just that undocumented immigrant who somehow gets wrapped up in that criminal justice system being Black. And tell us about what you as an advocate for TPS holders, and I guess for, you know, just Black immigrants in general, have found, like, what do you say to the person who says, well, if you somehow got embroiled in the criminal, just, you know, somehow committed a crime and now you're being deported, well, it's on you. And I've had to hear about the case of someone who you may or may not know, and I'm actually not going to say their name, but there's one TPS holder in particular who somehow got embroiled with the cops in Brooklyn for driving a dollar van, who I know is kind of in detention right now, ready to be deported. So for that TPS holder who, like, what have you found about TPS holders who somehow got embroiled with the cops and the criminal justice system?
Yeah. First of all, I want to say sorry about that person who's in detention. That's not a good place to be. So about people of TPS holders and folks who get in contact with law enforcement, it's inherent in the fact that Black neighborhoods in New York City are just criminalized, not just individuals, but communities are criminalized. So it doesn't really take much. Very often it could be, for instance, you have examples of people who might jump the turnstile. You might be running late for work or something, and your Metro card isn't working, or you don't have enough to put on it. So you hop the turnstile, and then you might get apprehended. Depending on the circumstance. Once you're apprehended for that, and they arrest you, when they arrest you, they take your fingerprint. And regardless, it could have been a slap on the wrist or something like that. But the fact that you get arrested for it, all of a sudden now you're on ICE's radar, because that fingerprint goes to a federal database that ICE has access to. And if you're undocumented, you've all of a sudden become, you had the spotlight put on you. If you were in a shadow, now all of a sudden they know where to find you. They know what address you're staying at. They know that you're in jail, and they know to send somebody upon your release. You know, whatever it is, they're onto you now. And that's usually how it happens. We have people who came here and they got wrongfully accused of something, and they went to jail and they go to court, and when they go to court, the case gets dismissed. After the case is dismissed, who's waiting for them in the courthouse? It's ICE. It wasn't that person's fault. You know, if you jump a turnstile and you're late for work, should your punishment be deportation? You know, like that's it's something as simple as that. It could be Maybe people might judge a small amount of marijuana. Is a small amount of marijuana something you should get deported for? That, you know, because these are things that in white neighborhoods that doesn't happen. This doesn't happen in Brighton Beach. There are many undocumented Ukrainian and Russian people down in Brighton Beach, Coney Island area. And in Greenpoint, they're not going to those places and looking for people. They're going to Flatbush. They're going to Washington Heights. They're going to Cambria Heights. They're going to Crown Heights. They're not, they're going to our neighborhoods, the Bronx.
So, all right. So, Legacy Original Four, we've had Albert St. Jean with us for about 15 minutes. He's probably going to be with us for another 10 minutes. So, anybody who's listening and needs to weigh in, please do so ASAP 714-242-6119, 714-242-6119, and certainly press one. Now, my question to you, Albert St. Jean, as we're wrapping up with you, is now I'm a TPS holder. I've got this 18-month period. Walk me through this 18-month period. What should I expect? If in the worst case scenario, I'm going to be going back to Haiti after these 18 months, and if I say have a job, I know that there's this issue with TPS holders having a job, and that as soon as TPS expires, you can't show up on the job the next day. Am I correct?
In theory, that's how it's supposed to work. In theory.
Right, but we also know there's a lot of undocumented workers on jobs. So is it that like you were a TPS holder on the job from one day, and then when Trump issued, like, walk us through the logistics of like when Trump issued this thing a few weeks ago I think, saying, okay, no more TPS, it's over now, there won't be a renewal, but you've got 18 months. If I'm on the job the day before Trump issues that, the day before Trump makes that announcement, what happens to me the next day when I'm technically no longer a TPS holder, but I'm in this 18-month grace period? Like, let's talk about the logistics of that 18-month grace period. Yeah. What does that mean for a TPS holder who, say, had a job the whole time they had TPS? And what does that mean, in the worst case scenario for when the 18 months end?
Yeah. So, and someone can call in and correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that once, like, going forward in these 18 months, it's as though you are on TPS, you're legally working, you have your permit and everything. But once that's over, once it, the designation is finished, is terminated completely, that next day you're basically in the shadows. If you were in the country if you were in the country before before they granted TPS, the life that you were living before, you're gonna end up going back to that life, basically back into the shadows. But during that time, you need to find other ways that, other avenues that you might qualify for. And also during that time, there will be a long fight to open up new avenues that you could get into. But if nothing happens, the way that it stands as it is, you will be back in the shadows again, and they will start, deporting people in theory, and rounding people up. But I don't know how feasible that is, because it's a very expensive process. Is this answering your question? I hope I understood your question correctly.
Yeah, you are answering my question. And if I'm getting it correctly, once the 18 month is over, the average TPS holder just basically joins the rank of the undocumented.
Exactly.
You become like any other undocumented. Exactly. And we know there were like 3, 4, 5, 6, I'm not even sure how many times more undocumented than there are TPS holders.
Exactly.
So the day the 18 months end, you're back in the ranks of the undocumented. It's not like TPS holders are in like a priority list for deportation compared to the other undocumented? Or are they? They just become like the other undocumented. If they somehow become embroiled with law enforcement, then they're like more, they're more under the gun than anybody else. But it's not like if you're a TPS holder and the 18 months end, you're automatically sent back.
Well, here's the funny part about that, because you would think that ICE prioritizes people according to, you know, like the legality here. The thing is, ICE prioritizes people from what we found based on the ease at which they can locate them, the convenience in finding them. So so just because like you did have this legal status and now you're off of it, and like, okay, well, you know, it's not like I'm here illegally, so on and so forth, it doesn't really mean that they're not going to prioritize you. Chances are they could, because they know, or they have an idea of where you are and what you're doing. So that's normally typically how they go about it. But you know, there's a whole, you have to go through a process of order of removal and so on and so forth. If they were really successful at doing this, it would just jam up the entire system and it would come to, I don't see it. I just don't see it working. I don't see it working at all. But,
You mean you don't see the 58,000 TPS holders being automatically deported after the 18 months?
No, it's
just
it's
like
impossible.
All the other undocumented. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what thinking as well. But it's good to hear it from you. Yeah, it sounds like it's extremely.
Don't forget, and don't forget, real quick. There are people that have had TPS that it's over now for them. The folks from Liberia and Guinea, and the other countries affected by Ebola.
And what's happened to them? They're basically mostly still here. Is that what's happening?
Yeah. Yeah, right. But they're mostly still here. There hasn't been a mass removal of them, and their numbers aren't as large as the Haitian communities.
Right, right. Well, that's good to know. Okay, so that's very good. So now let me ask you about. First, let me see if there's any hands raised here. Okay. So we don't have any hands raised here. And I'd say we have about three minutes left. So why don't you finish us up with, you know, what you want us to know for Monday. So we know that for Monday, this forum is happening at 5:30 in Crown Heights, and it's happening at PS241 at 976 President Street. What is it you want to leave us with?
So Monday, come hungry to learn, come ready to talk to people, you know, don't, you know, sue against TPS, who probably is with pay. You know, don't be afraid to, if you feel like you want to speak up, souvle parler, s'il vous plaît parler, n'a pas nous ca changer non ou moun pas besoin connait ki moun ouyé pour moun ca connait voix. Okay, moun connait long la lou, man. I just wanted to say that. But that's the biggest thing I want people to know. And also I should say that I want to give big thanks to the PS241 PTA and Haitian Americans United for Progress and Haitian Women for Haitian Refugees and Haitian Leadership Coalition for helping us with this.
Yeah, this is a great initiative. We're certainly very, you know, we're looking forward to continuing to follow this story and to continuing to follow the work of Baji. And Albert Saint-Jean, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We certainly look forward to having you back on the show and to continue to follow your progress as an organizer in the Haitian community. So thank you so much for joining us tonight. We're going to go next to a musical break. And then after that, we're going to be joined by Ugila from Florida, who's going to give us a little bit of an update on Haitian current affairs. So Thank you again. Thank you so much, Albert Saint-Jean, for joining us. Merci en pile. Nous très contents de rencontrer avec vous. Nous t'es con Benjamin Nduga Kabouye pendant un pile temps et nous contents que Ourivé, c'est vous même qui a représenté l'intérêt haïtien dans Badji et nous t'aimons continuer à parler avec vous. Merci en pile.
Merci en pile. It was an honor. Take care.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. All right, so folks, I'm going to leave you in a little bit of a musical break with Misty Jean Lipatwata. And then at the other end of that, in about 5 minutes, we're going to be discussing for 15, 20 minutes, just the latest on Haiti news, Haiti and Haitian news with Hugues Girard from Florida.
Dèkou yon fey fon te pote, la vi menèm a l'étranger. Chak jou mwen toujou a pense, ki kote mwen taye. Ak peyi mal enkite, sa fe lontan mwen ritoune. Ayiti chéri se ou mwen mè. Gade ti moun yo kap soufri. Kade frèm sèm yo kap peri. Tout kote ou pase nan televizyon, se yon sèl vizyon ki lè nap jwen nan solisyon. Mè pou ki sa se konsalye,
mè pou ki sa,
pou ki nou pa chèche yon jan, pou n sispan goumè, pou n mè tèt ansan, pou n kagon demè. Pays nou an s'espan traîne.
Nou pa besoin crier, nou pa besoin gueuler. Sa gué pour changer, nou pa besoin crier,
nou pa besoin crier.
Sa gué pour changer,
Gade ki jan gen méchanceté. Lè yon pil malhonnête. Pou ki division ak malnutrition fin tu yon nation. Malère yo san attention. Pa gen travay pie yon mare.
Pa gen travay pie yon mare.
Ba yon kouraj pou si pote. Fòk nou pran konsyans, fòk gen tolérans ak an pil patyans. Ba Haiti yon l'attendant.
Nou pa besoin kriye,
besoin kriye.
Sa gen pou chanje,
sa gen pou chanje.
Nou pa besoin kriye,
nou pa besoin kriye.
Sa gen pou chanje,
Yeah, se pou nou mande yon met la, mande courage pou.
All right, Legacy of 1804. We have just a small window to get an update on what the latest news has been in the last 2 weeks. In Haiti, we've got Hugues Girard on the line with us from Florida to do that. Hugues, are you here with us?
Yes, I am, Alice. Good evening, listeners of Legacy of 1804. Once again, it's a great pleasure to be with you.
Right.
The latest in Haiti. Go on.
Yeah. Before you go on into that, any reactions to the segment you just heard on TPS? I'm actually personally excited to find that Badji, which, you know, is the, you know, advocates for Black immigrants, has decided to expand beyond TPS to look at, which of course is only logical, more permanent solutions. I mean, the Trump administration has made it clear it's not renewing TPS anyway, but one more permanent solutions and even potentially general amnesty. Any reactions to that?
I'm knowing this administration, I'm a little skeptical, but then again, this extension was not exactly expected either. So who knows? I'm not sure I have a well enough informed perspective on this, but seeing the atmosphere, it would be really interesting to see this kind of about face into general amnesty. I mean, there's you know, the election cycle next year, I think, offers great hope. I like what I'm hearing on the ground at local levels. We have a new, quite as it's kept, we have a new class of public servants being elected at local at the local levels, you know, small towns, mayors, city councils, state legislatures, that sort of thing. The profiles are very different. I'm calling it the Bernie effect. Now, will this translate into congressional change? That remains to be seen. However, I have a lot of hope riding on the next election cycle for Congress. If it is noticeably different, then suddenly I think it's not so far-fetched, because I'm going a little roundabout with to answer your question, because I think one of the things we should anticipate is that a new Congress will probably have impeachment on its agenda. And in that case, Mr. might feel a little more interested in negotiating in things like TPS and DACA. That's where my hope is. But as far as Trump himself, I'm skeptical. That's my opinion.
Right. I mean, even Obama said, you know, if you want something, you're going to have to make me do it. So it's not a question.
Right.
Trump himself, but if you're saying that you're seeing a Bernie effect in terms of local elections, that could counteract the Trump effect. But thank you for that, Hugues, and let's move right into, you know, kind of a redux of what we would have been discussing if we had a full-blown Haiti news and blog review tonight.
Well, I'm not sure what we talked about last time, but there's been this whole Petro-Caribe reckoning, or at least semblance of a reckoning, or the beginning of a reckoning in Haiti. Folks might recall that Senator, last we spoke about this, Senator Yuri Lacroix had taken it upon himself to form a commission to look into what happened to the $3 billion that Haiti had borrowed from Venezuela through the Petro-Caribe program. And he had issued a 99-page report and decided that he was told to go back and dig further. He handed that report over to Senator Beauplan, who is going. And he issued a 600-somewhat-page report, which was initially 486. All this to say, the report has gone through several changes, and several dates of release were announced, and then those dates were also changed. First, there was October 30th, then it was November 14th and the 24th. But however, what was interesting is that long before the report came out, the PHTK people who felt most targeted, Mickey's crew, who felt most targeted by this report, long before they had read the first page of the report, they let it be known that they would reject the report's finding based on procedure, forced Beauplan to change the release of the report's date. Needless to say, as soon as the reports finally hit the waves, all the people who are named in there, folks like Laurent Lamothe, former prime minister, these are the more visible players. Stéphanie Villedouin, who was Minister of Tourism, they all took to the media, to the airwaves, to attack the report and claim that it was inaccurate, it was unfair, and that they're not guilty. But several things have been noted is that these people are not saying they're attacking the report. They're not attacking its essence, which was these people were accused of dilapidating, basically of finding ways to steal public money, to steal public funds. And they're denying this. They're denying the procedures. They're denying, they're saying the report is biased. They're accusing the members of the commission that put the report together of being pro Lavalas. And they even went so far as to say that this report was in fact concocted by former interim president, provisional president, Jean Privé. Senator La Tortue had convened the entire Senate to come and debate the report and talk about it. And lo and behold, many of the senators refused to come in. They refused to attend the sessions, and some even asked for a 6-month extension to read the report. Essentially, the report accused the ministers of not looking out for the interests of the states, of accused them of contract of signing of being in collusion, of being in cahoot with several entities who have contracts with the government. For example, Mr. Lamothe is accused of signing a report to build, to have something like 13.5 kilometers of road built somewhere, and only 10 was built, but the government was charged for the whole 13. That report was revised to say no, the government was built for 17, and that the rest of the money just went sideways. In the case of Tourism Minister Stéphanie Villedouin, the most famous case is that of a $40 million grant that was given to develop tourism in Jacmel. And long before this report out, there were several op-ed articles of Jacmel citizens writing open letters to Madame Villedouin, asking her where did the money go. As far as they could tell, they could barely account for half of the $40 million. So that's just another example. Noted in the report was the absence of the most glaring publicly accused, former President Michel Martelly, and several other names that people felt should have been indexed, should have been pointed out by the Petro Caribe report. And the speculation is that by leaving some names out, they hope the accused themselves will bring them in, will drag them in at some point. So the Senate failing to show up to take basically the report into account. Yuri Latorti, as president of the Senate, didn't hesitate to send the report either way, directly to Commissaire du Gouvernement at the parquet, to send it to the DA, essentially. because in the final analysis, the report formally accused these ministers of stealing the larger part of mostly $3 billion, starting with the government of now deceased former President René Préval in 2008, right through, and there's some dispute about exactly how far was the report supposed to look into. Was it up to September of 2017, or right at the very end of the Martelly era? Whereas some of the complaint is that Prévert himself did spend some $30 million for the briefing term that he was in office. So this is a big brouhaha right now. It's mostly the Petro Caribe report, which has which has provoked large protests in Haiti, daily protests in Haiti, denouncing corruption. And it's, of course, in typical theatrical Haitian fashion, because current President Jovenel Moïse, who himself is indexed in the report as someone who overbilled the government for building roads before he became president, he stepped out and presented himself as the only one being capable of fighting corruption and on his own to fight corruption in all of Haiti. And of course, this provoked laughter from several sectors. But among the demonstrations, the daily street demonstrations, I believe on Tuesday, there was a very unusual one that gathered elements from Haiti's middle and bourgeois class, who were basically fully behind Martelly when he was Martelly and his government was just going through this money 5 years ago, and now elements from that class were out on the streets also protesting. However, their numbers were noticeably low, whereas people expected tens of thousands. The few Haitian media that mentioned the protest talked about thousands of people in the street demonstrating against corruption. And as we've known for a long time, corruption is a serious issue in Haiti, and it is at all levels of government, of life, really, to the point where it has, some argue that it has crippled the development of the country. These are the two main events that I can think of that has made headline news in Haiti, besides right before that, the horrible police massacre up in the Bolos area. I think we talked about this last time, where the police officers went up there to remove arms and end up killing people, something like 20 right. people. We may have talked about that in the last update. So, yeah, that's pretty much the most that I have right now. It's mostly the Petro Caribe report.
Now, any updates on Minu Just? Or, I mean, that's something I need to do a show on, but what's
that's
going on
right.
with Minu Just, right? That transition happened, and have the other troops left? The MINUSTAH troops,
officially,
have they left?
The bulk of the old MINUSTAH troops left. But as you know, the MINUSTAH kept a contingent of people, among them many unnamed, quote-unquote, police officers. What was remarkable is that the head of MINUSTAH this time around is an American.
Yes, I saw that.
She decided that she was going to take Jovenel Ali's words and give him a chance to prove that he is indeed the one who can fight corruption. And it's all very ironic when you consider that Jovenel is himself under indictment. He was indicted right before he was sworn in as president among other things, money laundering, and again, for figuring in that Petro Caribe report for having defrauded the government through overbilling. And now he wants to be the one to fight corruption. So, mm-hmm. and in a very serious face, the Armenian resistor person decided that she's going to give him the benefit of the doubt and see what he can do about corruption. Many thought that he should just turn himself in at the Grand Parti National, and that would be a convincing sign.
And what about Trump's ambassador to Haiti? We heard that she was named a few months ago, and of course Rex Tillerson has now resigned. So it looks like Trump's State Department is a bit of a mess. But it sounds like she's not as flamboyant or present or visible as was Pamela White. Am I correct?
Oh, absolutely. She's a far cry from Pamela White. The new one is described as a team player, so she likes to be in the background. She doesn't like to be flashy, which to the point of looking absolutely absent. Because ironically, I don't recall seeing anything in the media of her presenting her letter to the president just yet.
Mm-hmm.
So if she's on the ground in Haiti, she's keeping a very low profile.
We'll certainly be following this, of course. But yes, I did think that it's interesting that she's so, we're not hearing anything about her. I certainly wasn't, and I was wondering if you had. So this is great. So thank you so much, Hugues, for this update. And of course, we will be back next Friday for Legacy of 1804. Check my social media to find out if it will be at 9 p.m. or 10 p.m., and I've already got a show that I want to do for next Friday. I don't yet know if the guest wants to show up specifically next Friday or the Friday after next, but of course we will be here next Friday regardless. And again, thank you very much, Hugues Gilal. Thank you very much, Albert Saint-Jean from Black Alliance for Just Immigration. And I will leave you with what has traditionally been our theme song, which is One Autre by Bouillon Amboise and the Blues in Red Band. Have a great night, everyone. We'll be right back.